Even so, all the individualities of the crew, this man's valor, that man's fear, guilt and guiltiness, all varieties were welded into oneness, and were all directed to that fatal goal which Ahab, their one lord and keel, did point to. The rigging lived. The mastheads, like the tops of tall palms, were outspreadingly tufted with arms and legs. Clinging to a spar with one hand, some reached forth the other with impatient wavings. Others, shading their eyes from the vivid sunlight, sat far out on the rocking yards, all the spars in full bearing of mortals ready and ripe for their fate. Ah, how they still strove through that infinite blueness to seek out the thing that might destroy them.
"Why sing ye not out for him, if ye see him?" cried Ahab, when, after the lapse of some minutes since the first cry, no more had been heard. "Sway me up, men! Ye have been deceived. Not Moby Dick casts one odd jet that way and then disappears."
It was even so. In their headlong eagerness, the men had mistaken some other thing for the whale-spout, as the event itself soon proved. For hardly had Ahab reached his perch, hardly was the rope belayed to its pin on the deck, when he struck the keynote to an orchestra that made the air vibrate as with the combined discharges of rifles. The triumphant halloo of 30 buckskin lungs was heard, as, much nearer to the ship than the place of the imaginary jet, Moby Dick bodily burst into view.